You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Thanks for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting across the table from me is Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I hope everybody's getting ready for Halloween or Old Hallows Eve.
Old Hallows Eve.
All right, I got my candy stockpiled. I am ready to go.
I can't stockpile it because I'll eat it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't stockpile. I have to get like the day of or right before all that. I have to have my wife get it, and then she has to hide it like at her office because, I mean, if it's chocolate, I will whoop its ass. I'll go crazy.
And you said on the last show you're a Kit Kat kind of guy.
Yeah, I like Kit Kats, and I like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, too.
Big fan of
peanut butter cups.
I like Snickers.
Yeah.
And I would have to say, man, I like peanut M&Ms, man.
No, those, hey, that's hard to beat, too.
I like to throw those things in the freezer.
I like to just eat all the chocolate off them and put the peanuts out for my friends when they come over and there's a big bowl of peanuts. That's what I like to do. I like to share. You know, I'm a big giver. I like to give a little like that.
You know, that's how
I am.
That's true.
So if you're ever at my house, don't eat the peanuts. Anyway, folks, we're going to have a fun one. We're going to talk a little Halloween stuff here, a little creepy story stuff, just to kind of get everybody in the mood for what's coming up on the weekend, a little trick-or-treating. But before we get into that, we got some pretty insane news that's popped out. And this one's rough right here.
Yeah, did you check this out, Cameron? You're aware of cryotherapy. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, because a couple of the guys I train with, they actually go and do it whenever they're in fight camps. They will go and do it.
Yeah.
We have one actually here in town.
Uh-huh. Now, some of them are whole-body cryotherapy, and some of them aren't. It's like a suit
where your head sticks out.
Right. So, but this has become very popular among athletes. It's for relieving sports-related injuries and soreness. And cryo saunas or cryo chambers work by immersing customers in frigid temperatures, which decreases inflammation and muscle tension. And they say that the maximum amount of time recommended for this type of therapy, is around 3 minutes. Now, the manager of a Nevada cryotherapy salon was found dead on Wednesday morning after she had become trapped in a frigid cryo chamber overnight.
Oh.
Authorities have confirmed that Chelsea Ake, 24, entered the chamber while closing up her Rejuvenance location in Henderson, Nevada, on Tuesday night. Now, somehow, she accidentally got locked inside for at least 10 hours until her body was found the next morning by her employees. By that time, Ake had long since either frozen to death or had suffocated within the chamber, which can reach temperatures as low as minus 240 degrees Celsius. Now, the authorities have ruled out the death was due to operator error, but they say that somehow the machine malfunctioned. Unfortunately, according to Ake's best friend, Shaylin B., the salon was not monitored by cameras, So there actually is no visual evidence to confirm exactly how the accidents occurred, but they think it was just operator error, man.
I just can't see how they would lock and not be able to be open from the inside.
Right, you would think so. I mean, everybody, you've been inside a walk-in cooler.
Yeah.
I mean, they always have the emergency.
Where you can get out of them.
I don't know.
Because they used to not, like those old refrigerators. Kids would lock themselves in it, allegedly, back in the day, and, you know, people get in freezers and stuff like that. I just can't imagine that wasn't built with
it.
Well,
now I've wanted to try this cryotherapy, and now I'm going to be nervous when I go in there.
You better take somebody outside you trust.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah, but see, there is no camera. So was it foul play? Did somebody throw her in there and lock her in there?
Mm.
I mean, you can imagine if it's 240 degrees, minus 240 degrees Celsius, and I threw you in there and shut the door and then just sat there and held it shut for, I mean, what, half hour? You'd be dead. I mean, how long do you think you would live in that situation?
But you got to have, somebody has to realize that there's no cameras to do that, and that they lock from the inside, and that they wouldn't be able to get out normally.
Well, I'm not saying this is foul play. I'm just saying you could do that, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure when they found her 10 hours later, I mean, she was as solid as an ice cube.
If the thing was on. That's what they don't tell you. Was it on? Was it pumping out the cold? Or was it off, and it's just airtight? And when it got in there, she suffocated.
They do say that it could have been suffocated.
You don't know.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You don't know. It's terrible. It's a terrible thing.
Terrible.
Feel bad for
be
her family.
If you're cryogenically treating your injuries.
Take a little, listen, everybody just pass a little goodwill and good feelings along to her family. That's bad.
What's funny about the cryogenic thing is that it really is helpful. And this whole time, I've always looked like, look at these idiots, these polar bear club that are jumping in the icy water.
It's good for them.
Turns out it's good for you.
Yeah, it's good for them.
Right?
Like the ice. You ever tried to do an ice bath? I got talked into that one time.
No, I never did that.
Don't. Dude, it's horrible.
I don't plan to.
It's so horrible. It makes you feel good, but I just don't know if I want to feel
that
good.
When I was like in high school and stuff to ice like injured legs and stuff, we'd have to stick our legs like in an ice bath, but I don't think my whole body.
Your whole body. Do it one time. Yeah, we've done it where the steam's rolling off your dome.
I already know it's cold. I don't really need to experience it to prove it to myself.
Exactly. Yeah, it's rough. Trust me, it's rough. Well, I got you something here you're going to like. That basically, Samsung has been told to build robots who can work for less than the Foxconn staffers. Now, this is South Korea, they say, is a target, is smartphones and other things that currently require human hands. Now, this actually comes from the Register. This is Simon Sherwood, says that Samsung and South Korea are taking aim at electronics manufacturing costs with a new investment, and that new investment is robots, and that they hope that they can make mechanical men cheaper to operate, even in jobs that need flexible human fingers. It said South Korea's Ministry of Trade, Industry, and Energy has found 6.75 billion won. I didn't say won, folks. I said won, which is about 14.8 million American, for an effort to help Samsung develop bots capable of handling tricky tasks.
I thought you were going to say it's worth about $14.
All right, here we go. Since South Korea stands to pick up business operating and or supply factories to do the jobs that total require plenty of workers in China and other developing nations. Now, it says big contract manufacturers are very, of course, we know, cost sensitive. So anything that reduces their outgoings will be welcome. Or maybe not. It says China's rise has been helped by many millions of people who have been able to win decent paying semi-skilled jobs. And China knows manufacturing isn't its long-term ticket to prosperity, but we'll also hope these bots don't arrive in a hurry. So will the likes of India and Indonesia, who are trying to bring these hard electronics like this, or trying hard to get them there, into their shores. And so basically what they're saying is that China knows that they need to do this to make the money, but they don't want to do this because it takes away from the people that are the Chinese people working there too.
Absolutely.
So you're kind of caught in between a rock and a robot, if you will, because I can't look. We all know it's coming. Sooner or later, you're going to get it to where robots building robots. We know it's coming. It's Kyle's favorite thing he can think about. But I don't think it needs to be now. Can we slow this train down a little bit? I don't want to have to. How are you going to take your car to a mechanic? You going to take your car to a mechanic? It's going to be a robot.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of the old school Total Recall with Johnny Cab. That's going to be your Uber driver. This is Johnny Cab. You don't want to talk to people like that. You know, I like dealing with people. I like to trust my stuff to a person, not a robot.
You like dealing with people?
Yeah, I'm a people person.
I find that hard to believe. Folks, if you
maybe I'm stretching the truth a little bit.
The phone conversations I've had with him doesn't sound like he's a people person.
Yeah, maybe I'm stretching the truth a little bit.
I'm going to say, check this out from Cryptozoology News. An Idaho truck driver claims that he hit and killed a Bigfoot.
Yes!
But the sheriff burned the evidence.
What?
Yep, he says truck driver Trey says that he was on I-90.
Wait, did you see his name's Trey?
That's what he said.
That's got the coolest name. This old truck driver, Trey.
Right. He was carrying a tank filled with ethanol when he hit an animal near Mason Creek 20 years ago. He says, it was already getting dark and it was winter. The traffic wasn't too bad, but the peaks and bottoms were starting to get ice. I was just getting into the National Forest, and the hills started getting steeper and longer. And that tank was filled with the top with ethanol, so there was no room for error. He says that he was about 30 minutes into the forest when he spotted some kind of an animal running in front of his truck. He wasn't able to use the brakes fast enough, and he ended up hitting the creature. He says that the big rig rolled over, and it came to a stop right at the bridge. Well, I quickly got unbuckled and climbed out of the driver's side window as fast as I could and ran down the hill to a safer distance. I noticed the smell of ethanol was strong in the air.
And feces, probably, too.
Right? Now, he believes another motorist had already called 911 because he could hear the sirens approaching. He says the first to show up was the sheriff, and he and I walked around to the other side of the truck, and that's when we first spotted this creature, or at least what was left of the poor thing. He says the upper body was laid out in a way that there was no doubt at what we were looking at. The mutilated torso of the animal, he says, had a cone-shaped head and weird long arms. It was missing an arm, and the sheriff had no idea what to make of it, but we knew that it was a Bigfoot, but no one wanted to admit it. I also noticed that this was the actual sheriff, not a deputy. Now, Trey claims that the accident suddenly became the least of his worries. He says he was taken to the sheriff's vehicle as the man in charge called the firefighters and asked them to hold back until further notice. And as if it was no big deal, he took a road flare. He lit it and threw it directly into the leaking tanker truck. He wanted me never to speak of what they saw that day, to never tell a soul that Bigfoot are real, as it would mean that nothing but trouble if I did. He threatened that they could make me disappear right now as part of this explosion.
Listen here, boy.
Now, come on, man. I'm going to have a hard time believing this one. Not that he hit a Sasquatch, but you're telling me the sheriff brought him to the car, lit a flare, and then threw it at the tanker truck, blowing up the whole truck. I was like, look, don't be talking about Bigfoot, or we're going to make you a part of this explosion. Why would the sheriff do that?
Listen here, boy. You don't know how things go around here.
Right?
Law don't go around here, law.
Which
dog.
Way do you do ways? Law way?
Law way.
Okay, just checking. Yeah.
Throws a road flare and
blows up the truck.
First of all, he tells the fire department to stay
back up.
And
back
the
up.
Fire department's like, hey, it's all yours, Sheriff. It's all yours, man.
I have a trouble. I mean,
everybody out there, y'all smell that?
What is the movie Roadhouse where the guy runs the town?
Yeah.
The bad guy. What's his name? I can't think of his name. That's what this is. The sheriff, he runs this town. The firefighters, he accidentally hit an animal that looked like a Sasquatch, and he blew up the entire tanker truck.
He just burned up a tanker truck for what was left of an elk.
Right? Yeah. He hit a possum. He blew up the whole tanker truck.
Yeah. I'm not doubting. Maybe he did run over one. What I'm doubting is the fact that this sheriff really is convenient. Look, man, the story is awesome, but sometimes it gets a little. You're telling me that nobody out there, you run over there, was half of a Bigfoot left. Somebody wouldn't just grab it and go, dude, we're taking this in.
Well, first of all, the guy, whatever company the guy was driving the truck for, I mean, he's going to have to call his boss and go, look, I rolled the rig and it blew up. I mean, there's no way you can go through news sources and find an actual case of this accident that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't you be able to?
Well, wouldn't they be able to go, well, how come it didn't blow up when it crashed? Why didn't it look like the fire started at the back? I mean, what are you talking about? They're going to send investigators. What happened, man? It just caught on fire, man. It just turned over, man.
I'm having a hard time believing this
story. There's a reason you're having a hard time believing this story. It sounds awesome. I ain't lying. It sounds great. Great story, yeah.
Moving on.
This right here is going to make my niece happy because she always says this and comes to find out it's real. This actually is a study. It comes from Miss Brenda Bustos. Now, she's a registered dietitian with the Texas A&M Health Science Center, the School of Public Health. And she says that basically being hangry, folks, is a signal from your brain. Now, that's the difference. That's kind of like crossing hungry and angry. We all know people, we laugh about the term hangry.
Mm.
People get hungry, they
it's
get
real.
Angry.
Yeah. My wife gets very irritable when she's hungry.
Well, there's a reason here. It says, what's interesting? This is what Brenda says. What's interesting is anger is actually a survival mechanism. Now, the amount of glucose available for the brain declines as more time passes between meals. Food is important because when glucose levels become too low, our brain triggers the release of stress hormones.
Mm.
So it's actually a real, real thing. She says that glucose is the number one fuel for the brain, and it aids with concentration and our thinking abilities. There is a definite linkage between lack of glucose because of lack of food intake and limited self-control responses. So it's a real thing. Yeah. They say that in a brain lacking glucose, it's harder to control signs of anger. Acute bouts of hunger trigger the release of stress hormones, which makes it harder to manage our anger and irritability. So it is a real thing.
A real thing.
So, you know, people say, oh, you're just here, have a Snickers bar. You're such a demon. Right, yeah, no, you really are hangry. Yeah. You really are hangry. You need to keep something like that around. So when it dips, people have a harder time controlling it. Makes perfect sense now. It's funny that it just kind of became a slang term and then this popped up.
Man, that's cool. Well, let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I enjoyed those news stories. A lot of them, I think, are interesting. A lot of the ones that we report on from time to time have to deal with DARPA. An awful lot of them, I would say, have to deal with DARPA. But we also get the cryptozoology ones. And, some people, and we also get into some tragic freak accidents like that. And we get into UFOs and things. But my favorite, I think, are just the short and sweet ones. When it comes to technology, new things that are being invented, as well as just the creepy unknown sightings of things. Like, what the heck was that? Mm-hmm. What is that? But this time of year is always my favorite time of year. It's fall. Fall is my favorite season. Not because just the weather, but the sporting events and things like that. But one of my favorite holidays, especially as a child, was Halloween.
Yes.
And, my kids love it. Of course, all kids do, mostly for the candy and stuff, but also for the fact that, now that I'm older, I like to just look at the little ones dress up. But, of course, everybody that listens to the show knows that I'm a pretty good storyteller, and as well as you, Cam. And so my kids always, around this time of year, want me to get into some creepy stories. And, of course, and then my nephews and nieces and stuff, the same thing. Oh, ask Uncle Kyle. He's got some great stories, stored up in that dome of his. But we're going to share some stories on today's show that have been forwarded to us from the listeners. Now, some of them were actually their experiences, and other ones were some interesting stories that they had read and they wanted to share with the show. And so we get a whole pile of these stored up over the months and years as people continually email the show, which we appreciate. And a lot of them get stuck in a separate file. So we just went in there and we kind of pulled some out of there that we thought were interesting. Of course, we couldn't share all of them. It would take us probably 2 months to do that if we wanted to just do those shows, stories, I'm sorry. But, Cam.
Yeah.
Let's start off with the history of Old Hallows Eve.
Well, let me ask you, what was your favorite, costume growing up that you were actually in? I mean, because I was thinking about this as far as how much that we've seen costumes change just since... we're alive since I can remember the craziest things, because I remember that one of the very first costumes that I remember having that was an actual store-bought costume, because when we were kids, it wasn't a popular thing to go to the store and buy a costume. You pretty much made it yourself.
Most of the ones I had were homemade.
you went as like a cowboy, or you went as like Dracula. You know, you put like some blood in the corners of your mouth, painted your face white.
You had those fake teeth.
Yeah, that's something like that.
Hurt your gums because they didn't quite fit right.
The plastic masks. Remember the plastic mask with just a little rubber band that held them on? And it made like the corners of your eyes hurt where you look through them because the plastic was sharp. It was one size fits most.
When I was lucky enough to get one of the store-bought costumes, it felt like I was cutting weight for like a wrestling match. It was like a plastic bag you're wearing.
Well, that's back whenever that you could actually do. Yeah, that's back when you could actually do that kind of stuff,
yeah.
Which was hilarious. One of the first ones I remember having, and probably my favorite costume, was I was Gene Simmons of Kiss. I actually had the Gene Simmons mask, and it had it wasn't hair. It was like plastic, you know, that was the hair and the mask, and you could barely breathe out of the holes and all that. But then I remember having one like you're talking about that was a plastic bag with like an inflatable head of some kind of ghoul, and you put the mask, it wasn't a mask, your head was like its neck, and you pulled the thing down and painted your face black, and then it velcroed underneath your chin to hold it on.
Yeah,
so it looked like it was real tall, but everything was vinyl and plastic bags. And now, you know, it's like, oh, it's you know, it's got to be flame retardant, it's got to be this. We didn't have that. You get too near something with some fire, it burnt. I mean, that was just the way it was. I just see how much it changes now, because there's mask companies online where I find some crazy masks that are like $400 and $500 masks.
Isn't that crazy?
Oh yeah, but I love it. I can't help but love it.
It is neat.
But I never really got into the ancient origins. You know, you hear all these old stories of what Halloween was, and certain people, you know, don't celebrate and things. So we're going to get into a little bit of the history. Now, what they found is they believe it dates back, the origins of Halloween, to an ancient Celtic festival of, now I always pronounced it Samhain, but I believe it's pronounced Samhain. Is what it's pronounced as. Now, about 2,000 years ago, the Celts in that area, which is now Ireland, the UK, and then, of course, northern France, they celebrated their new year on November 1st. And that was the day that marked, like you were just discussing, Kyle, the end of summer, the end of the harvest, and what was the beginning of a dark and cold time in their life, winter, mm-hmm. which that time of year was very often associated with what? Well, with death. That's when more people
the
get
fall.
Sick.
The beginning of fall, you know, the crops turn and it begins to get colder until leading up to a winter. You're right.
Well, but people even would get sick. I mean, mm-hmm. more people get sick during the winter than the summer. I mean,
still now today.
Exactly. So this is one of those ongoing type things. But it was November 1st is when they started their new year. Now, they believe that when I say they were talking about the Celts, that the night before the new year, that the boundary, the gap there, that crossing, that dividing line between the worlds of the living and the dead would become blurred, that you could cross, you know, in between. So on the night of October 31st is why they celebrated, you know, we'll say Samhain, and it's believed, or Samhain. And that's when they thought that the ghosts of the dead could be returned, or would return, to the earth. So you could basically communicate. Now, of course, in addition to, they said that these ghosts would return and cause trouble and would damage crops, but that they believed that it made it easier for the Druids or the Celtic priest to make predictions about the future at this same time also.
Mm.
Now, there were people that were, you got to imagine, at this time, they were entirely dependent on the natural world. We're talking about crops, you know, I mean, everything. There's nothing really protected them. So any of this was a very important part of their life. It had to be like a comfort of anything to know what these predictions, you know, people, they may tell you, you're going to have a great crop next year.
Yeah, I agree.
You're happy. You're going to make it through that time, whether it's real or not.
Well, they would make offerings or lay out sacrifice. I mean, every culture had its own rituals. But yes, they were hoping that, you know, the crops, next year's crops would turn out well and that you wouldn't get sick. Because back then, I mean, if it was cold and it was fall and going into winter and stuff, and I mean, a loved one got ill like a small child or something, I mean, it's not like you just run down to CVS and get some mm-mm. penicillin. I mean, uh-uh. It was a bad deal. You could literally die from something as simple as the flu.
Or as a scratch.
Yeah.
An ingrown fingernail turns into something septic and kills you.
Yeah.
You know,
well, we're so
like
lucky
that.
Nowadays.
Yeah.
Compared to then. So
extremely.
I mean,
well, the Druids of that time would actually build, when you were talking about the sacrifice, would build bonfires, and people would bring in, like, you know, parts of their crops to burn for better crops. They would even bring in animal sacrifices to these Celtic deities. So they would burn all these things, you know, as offerings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they say that during these celebrations that they wore costumes. And what we were talking about, the reason I brought up the thing on the head, is a lot of them consisted of animal heads and skins.
Mm.
And then that they would all kind of go around and tell each other's, like, fortunes or future. You know, kind of like, I guess, playing more like a, basically, if you think of it, it's more like a town fellowship as they all get together of what was going on there as a small tribal fellowship of things. Well, by 43 AD, the Roman Empire had conquered the majority of that area, of all the Celts. And then there's a course area there of around 400 years that they ruled the Celtic lands. And the two festivals of Roman origin were combined. It was a traditional Celtic celebration of Samhain. Rolled it in, and it was called Ferrerala. Now, that was the day in late October when the Romans traditionally celebrated the passing of their dead. Remember, that was right. there in late October. And the second was a day to honor Pomona, and she was a Roman goddess of the trees and the fruits, which is strange because her symbol is an apple. And that they believe that the celebration that they kind of rolled this in explains the tradition of bobbing for apples.
Oh.
And that's where they believe some of this came from. Now, Pope Boniface IV dedicated the Pantheon in Rome in honor to all the Christian martyrs, and the Catholic Feast of All Martyrs Day was established in the Western Church. All right, now Pope Gregory III later expanded the festival to include all saints as well as all martyrs, and then moved the observance to May 13th, or from there, to November 1st. So you see how this is starting to roll together, okay? Starting to pile up now. Now, in 1000 A.D., the church made November 2nd All Souls Day to honor the dead. Now, with that, it is widely believed today in the people that have studied all the history here that the church was attempting to replace the Celtic Festival of the Dead with a related but very church-sanctioned holiday. So basically trying to take it away from this pagan idea.
Which is funny because there's a lot of Christian churches around here that don't like Halloween.
Exactly, yeah. But this is kind of what they were trying. So you got to think All Souls Day is very similar to Samhain or Samhain. And they got, you know, parades, the bonfires, the whole thing. Also, you know, All Saints Day is kind of changed into being called All Hallows. And the night before it of the tradition in the night before the tradition of Samhain began to be called All Hallows Eve, which kind of turned into Halloween. Now, you want to talk about here in the States, the celebration of Halloween, you can imagine, was very limited, if not extremely limited, to the colonial areas there in New England, simply because of the Protestant belief.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how they were very, very strict. So that kind of put the brakes on it. But
they didn't like those medieval cosplay swing parties they used to have, right?
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Now, they believed that in the southern colonies that it was much more common to have this. And they said that there were beliefs and customs of different European ethnic groups as well, as American Indians kind of rolled into the version of what we have here of Halloween now. So it started then, and it's kind of snowballed into what we have here. Now, you bring up these parties. The very first celebrations were public events that were considered a play party that celebrated the harvest.
Mm.
So it kind of goes hand in hand. But at that time, people would still sit around and tell stories of the dead, ghost stories, like we're going to get into. They would dance, they would sing, you know, basically have a party. Which is cool because it seems like there for a while, the people now, at least in the last 20 years, people kind of got away from it. It seems like they're more and more getting into where they have like, was it trunk or treats that we have around here?
Yeah.
To where they have them, you know, in churches, or they have them at the college and different schools where they set them up where everybody can go, and it's more of a social event.
Yeah, it's like a carnival and stuff. They have different games for all the
exactly.
kids to play. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, there's a lot of things that went on. As well, like I said, they bring on a whole lot of stuff. Some of the Irish and the English traditions was brought around. That's where the dress up, that's where all these costumes and stuff went to kind of rolling in, and then the trick-or-treating come into it. But it was in the late 1800s, there was a move in America that wanted to change this whole Halloween idea into a holiday that was more about community, like we talked about, more of a get-together than about all the ghosts and the witchcraft. They wanted to try to separate themselves from that. So it's just the progression of moving forward. So they started having these common themed parties where they had kids games, people get together. And, you know, that's kind of the way we got it right now. Now, the parents were actually encouraged, and get a load of this. There was a lot of propaganda being published, but there was the newspapers, a lot of people, mayors, a lot of little town areas, things was really pushing to get all the scary, all the gross, all the creepy, all the basically the stuff that we kind of lean into now with Halloween completely removed from these parties. And it because of these efforts that they went forward with, Halloween lost most of its superstitious and religious overtones by the beginning of the 20th century. It was pretty much gone.
Yeah, I would say that kids nowadays lean towards just characters that they see. I mean, like the twins, they may want to be like a Halo character because of a video game they've
exactly.
played, or a cartoon that they've seen. Like, I want to be Buzz Lightyear or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is a lot different than when we were young. When we were young, it didn't seem to me, I mean, of course you could be anything, but most people were, like you were saying, the same old things. Everybody was always a vampire. Everybody was always a zombie.
Well, that's what they were talking.
Indiana Jones was popular.
Yes.
I remember being a Ghostbuster.
Star Wars.
Yeah, Star Wars, of course. Yeah.
Well, that's what they're kind of getting at in this, is there was a, and I guess that's what I'm trying to convey, is there actually was a tradition of everybody was the same thing. It's not like you dressed up as a frightening character. You dressed up as homage to the past, and that's what's kind of been erased in this whole history of Halloween. It got from going to where you dressed up like your ancestors and your ancestors, you passed these costumes on, things like that, to where now, like you brought up, you know, we dress up as, there's bears and there's, you know, Olafs and there's all these different, you know, pretty much any and everything you can imagine under the sun, everybody's going to dress up. Here's something I never thought about when I was looking into this, and they say that due to the high numbers of the children during the baby boom of the 50s, that's when the parties moved from the civic centers of the town into classrooms or homes where they could be more easily accommodated for people. And it was between what they think, they could kind of traced it and tracked it back to between 1920 and 1950 is where trick-or-treating kind of got revived. That was the whole thing. So it was basically what they said was an inexpensive way for an entire community to share the celebration of Halloween.
Mm.
So you can kind of see how it rolls around. Now, as we get to that point, they say that's kind of where the new Halloween was done. And today, America spends, this is what people have estimated, $6 billion annually on Halloween. And it's this country's second largest commercial holiday.
That's crazy.
But it makes sense now. Because now everything, every candy company is making, you know, pumpkin-shaped chocolates. And I mean, it's just, it's like Easter, it's like Christmas. It's one of those things, it's become commercialized. People have moved away from what it originally was to what we know it as now. So it's fun to go back and look at the old original roots of where it came from and what it actually is it still, it's giving thanks and it's hoping for a better, you know, a better coming year. So that's what's funny is you think of it. So folks, if you really want to celebrate a fun Halloween, treat Halloween night like you're starting your new year the next day.
Yeah, there you go.
So it would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Do you like pumpkin beer and pumpkin spiced coffee, and you know,
I've tried
that stuff. Always comes out this time of year.
I've tried them. I'm not a big fan of, I'm real picky about my coffee flavors, so I'm not a big fan of the pumpkin spiced coffee. I've tried the pumpkin spiced beer. I'm really not a big fan of anything pumpkin except maybe pie.
Yeah, pumpkin pie is awesome.
That's about as far as I'll go, but after that, no, nothing. I mean, I've tried them, but I just don't get caught up in it.
I got you. Well, enough of the history of Halloween. Let's get into some of these creepy stories that some listeners have sent to us. Check out this first story that was sent to us. It's about a creepy camping story that went awry one night. It says, okay, so one night on the spur of the moment, my best friend, my girlfriend, and I went camping on the banks of a creek that I lived within 5 miles of. We grabbed a 20-pack of beer, some blankets, and some cigarettes, and headed out in my piece of garbage van that I used to call the Good Spirits van. It was about a week to 10 days before Halloween, so it got dark on us quick. We made haste and gathered firewood with flashlights, ignited a fire, which rapidly got hot and threw off a lot of light, which allowed us to gather enough wood to chill and drink a couple of beers around. We later broke out the boombox and commenced to having a good time. A few hours went by very quickly. My girlfriend went to the van to get some sleep, although I don't know how she did it because once you got a few feet away from the fire, it got pretty cold. Anyway, my friend's girlfriend got off work at midnight and brought us some more beer, even though we didn't need it, because we had only drank about half of what we had initially bought. Those two later, at some point, got into an argument, and his girlfriend left. We watched as her taillights faded into the night. Then the weird stuff started happening. This place wasn't in the middle of nowhere. It was secluded, but we could still see farmhouses from where we were. It was far enough out, and cold enough out, where nobody would be out screwing around anywhere near us. With a forget that girl, my buddy turned up the radio as loud as it would go. But not for long, because I heard a distinct woman's voice from across the creek scream in a guttural way, "Help me." I looked across the fire at my buddy to see him look as pale and sheepish as I felt. He turned down the radio before I could even say anything. "Dude, did you hear that?" were his exact words. He grabbed his cell phone as we both grabbed flashlights and shined across the creek. He called his girlfriend to make sure that she didn't have car trouble down the road and that was her that was needing help. But she was already at home. That was like a relief, and then again more stress at the same time. It wasn't her, so who the hell could it be? We stood there in the grip of fear. Lights shined across the water. We didn't hear anything for what seemed like forever. Just when we were about to chalk it up to our imagination or jitters, we heard it again. "Help me!" A woman that couldn't have been more than 100 yards from where we were standing, which was right on the opposite bank of the creek from where we were. We quickly shone our lights from where the plea came from, but there was nothing there. We both called out, "Hello? Where are you? Hello? Who's there?" No response ever came. Being experienced in the outdoors, we both knew that if she were being attacked or chased, there would be other noises we could hear, like rustling in the fallen leaves, or as close as it sounded, some more cries for help or twigs snapping or something. By this time, whatever buzz we had from the beer was long gone. We began gathering whatever we could grab, and I woke up my girlfriend and commanded her to start the van, and that we were leaving. She promptly did so, and it probably is a good thing she did, as what came next scares me to this day. An unexplainable, "Help me!" came from the very back of the van, which was the opposite direction of where the screams had been coming from as we were going to get the last of our stuff. Needless to say, we left the beer, we left the radio, and we got out of Dodge. I had my girlfriend get out of the way and get out of the seat, and I got in and we drove off as fast as we could. I drove a dirt road about 60 miles an hour the whole way out. Now this happened on October 2002, and I can't believe what it was. I tried convincing myself that maybe it was coyotes yipping or barking or making a strange howling noise that I just confused as a woman's, but I know that that couldn't be. I also told myself that maybe it was a mountain lion. I've heard that they sometimes sound like a woman screaming. But this wasn't just a screaming woman. It was saying, "Help me." Whatever it was, it scared two 21-year-olds into leaving a case of beer behind and a radio. I don't think we would have made that up. So what do you think of that? It's like a ghost specter or something that's screaming at them. You know, I've heard of people hearing voices and stuff like that before. Yet loud screams, yells and stuff.
Yeah.
Man, that's creepy.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it would be. You know what I mean? Other than if it's not somebody really doing that, then what could it possibly be?
What's what he said? He said it was dark and it was cold. And he's like, why would somebody take the time out of the day to just screw with them like that? And also the fact that it was on the opposite side of this creek and the next thing you know, it's in the back of his van.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how would you do that?
Yeah.
Jumping around, swimming in cold water and stuff. I mean, that's just not going to happen. I mean, when it says he was at the back of the van, I'm assuming like outside of it, not inside the van.
Well, it reminds me of when we talked about like some of the sounds coming from when we did the ghostly cannibals down on the coast.
That's exactly right. They were hearing stuff all the way around them.
You know, it's like you want to believe it's nothing more. Maybe it's somebody that needs help or not. But when you start hearing sounds like that move around you real fast, you know, not like it's way over here. It's not like it's 100 yards over here. The next thing is it's 20 yards on the other side of the truck. That's when things start getting a little iffy right there. That, you know, you're like, what is, who? How do you play a joke like that even? I mean, if you were going to play a joke on someone, how do you do that? What do you, I mean, you could tell if it was a speaker, I would imagine.
Well, and like we've always said on the story, I mean, you don't want to confront people in the dark.
No.
That are out drinking or having a good time, I mean, and try to scare them if they're strangers. You don't know what they're packing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't think that the average person is going to do that. I mean, if it was your friends or if it was his girlfriend or somebody, you know, that they knew, okay, I know Blake and Roll are going camping out tonight. Let's go out there and screw with them. That's one thing, even though I wouldn't do that either.
Not with them two, no.
But you know what I'm saying? I could see that, but, I, you know, I don't think that's what happened in this case. Interesting story.
Exactly. Well, I got this story here from a fellow named DT. So I lived in a house in Texas that was haunted by what we like to call the 3-foot little man. Now, John and Glenn were my roommates. And John first sighted him standing in our entryway while we were watching TV one evening. Now, Glenn or I neither one had seen him. Glenn walked over and knelt down to where John said he had been, and he came back with big goosebumps. He simply said, "Cold spot." I ignored this at first, and for the next 3 days, every time I'd go through the kitchen, the cabinet where we kept the drinking glasses would be open about 6 inches. And I'd shut it every time I walked through, and finally I asked, "How lazy are you people that you can't close the cabinet door?" And they blamed it on the little man, but I still didn't buy it. Realizing I could shut the cabinet door that kept opening and close the other door, the second door overlapped the other one, they were heavy enough that if there was a draft, it would stay closed. And right after I figured this out, I went to the bathroom right off the kitchen. While I was in there, I heard a sound. It was a da-da-da-da-da-da. The cabinet door was only open 2 inches this time. I asked Glenn if he had just gotten a drinking glass, and he said he hadn't moved. For the next 3 days, I would get the urge to see what the time it was. And there's a clock radio in the bedroom off the kitchen, and every time I looked at it, it would be 1:11 or 2:22 or 3:33, etc. The next time I got the urge, I asked Glenn to see what time it was. He said, "Why?" I told him to just please look. When he came back, he said it was 2:23. I told him what was going on, and if he would have gone when I asked, it would have been 2:22. Well, Glenn and I was coming out of the room, and Glenn stops in the doorway. And he says, "D, this is really weird." He says, "Look at the door leading outside. I see a reflection of a full-length mirror on the opposite wall. The mirror is reflecting to the front of the refrigerator. Now, in the front of the refrigerator, there's a 3-foot-tall little man. But when he looks at the mirror or the refrigerator, he's not there." Now later, I was lying in bed. My girlfriend was coming over later. So I left the kitchen light on and just almost closed my door to the bedroom. And at the end of the bed, I noticed a square shape with a straight line kind of underneath and then something rounded above it. I closed one of my eyes. It was still there. I opened them, closed the other eye, still there. Finally closed both eyes. I started to panic a little bit. I figured there had to be a logical explanation. So I got up and turned on the lights. There was nothing there. Nothing between the bed and the door. Now I tried to go back to sleep, but there was no use. I couldn't relax until my girlfriend got there. I hadn't told her what I saw. I didn't dare tell her anything that was going on. Afraid she wouldn't want to stay. Anyway, we haven't seen the little man since. Thanks, DT.
Man, that's strange. Don't you think?
Well, it's the crazy thing to me is it's almost like a haunting,
but
of a gnome or like a little fae folk or something in there. But we also know that's the reason I chose it. Everybody knows that's the reason I chose it. But it's also too. You're talking 3 foot. Like, it's one thing to see, like, an 18-inch, you know, or something, but 3 foot, man, that's, I don't know, like, what could that be? You know, it's one of those things, and like, I love the fact he says, "Look, I look over at the refrigerator, you know, I don't see anything. I look over at the mirror, I don't see anything, but in the reflections of the way it looks into the glass, you can see it." I'm like, dude, that's unnerving. To me, anything that's like that you... almost like an everyday occurrence, little things like that, like the cold spot, little doors opening and closing. So many times we don't think about that. So many times you just walk right through it. It doesn't even dawn on you. You just go about your day. But Maybe it's time that we all start taking a look, especially around this time of year. We all start taking a look at a few more of the details of our life, at least, and see what we don't start noticing more and more around the house.
Yeah. Terrifying. Well, I've got another story that was sent to us that's very similar to yours. This one is really pretty creepy, and I enjoyed it. It goes like this. I am 56 years old and live in a small town in North Georgia. When I was 14, me and my siblings loved to camp out in an old abandoned house my mother grew up in. It's a small house with a couple of bedrooms. Me and my brother and my two cousins would always go camping in there. One time we were camping overnight, and we decided to go to bed. My brother and cousin in one room, and me and the other cousin in the other. We were on an old sofa with our heads on each end. It was pitch dark in the house except for the moonlight in the window directly in front of me. I was thinking, as I lay there on the couch, how beautiful the moon was when I saw a silhouette of a head go by. The only thing I could tell about it was that it was bald and short since the windows were low to the ground. Before I could say, what the... Another one went by. Then another. By the third one, I was getting on my feet and turning on the light. I will never forget the look of that room and how confused I was. Nothing was there. So I woke up my cousin and told him we needed to go into the other room. I told him something was in there, but he just wanted to go back to sleep. So we went into the other room. I had left the door cracked about 3 inches and laid there, just watching. It was dark, and I could only see the faint outline of the door, but could tell that it was opening very slowly. It took about 2 hours to open about a foot. By then, I was just as interested as terrified. Since it was pitch dark, I couldn't tell if it or they were going by the sofa, but I could sense that they were. I heard my heart pounding, and I even remember thinking, I hope that they can't hear it. The old house had those old skeleton locks that locked from the inside. And then I heard the knob turn. It's a sound like no other, and I'm sure that I heard it. After that, it's all blank. I don't know if I passed out from fear. I simply don't remember. People tell me even to this day that they believe my story. I'm telling you, I have no reason to make this up. I wouldn't anyways, and I wouldn't believe it if I was hearing it from somebody else, but I'm telling you, something was in that room with us that night. So what do you think of that?
That's
creepy.
Yeah, I don't like any of them.
You know, I can remember as a child, having a nightmare or something and being similar. And, know, when you're young, sometimes you'd like to sleep with the door open a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just so your parents were still up watching television. A little bit of the light from the other room would maybe cast in there. Just made you feel a little better. And I can often remember, like I said, waking up in the middle of the night after having a bad dream or something and just watching that door. And sometimes I thought it would move, but then it probably wouldn't. You know, I can remember that. So I can picture him. He's lying awake, and then he sees something. When he's saying silhouettes, I'm saying from his story, not outside the window. Like, he's looking out the window at the moon, and he sees, like, a dark head move in the room. Three heads, right? So what is that? You know what I mean? Is that is that shadow people? Is that extraterrestrials? I mean, something was in the room. But then he said he intently remembered. I mean, I like the guy's patience. He sat there for 2 hours watching that door. He said it slowly moved open to a foot after 2 hours. So, I mean, he is studying what's going on. And I can only imagine because I've been hunting before where you can hear your heartbeat real loud and you are thinking, man, I hope they don't hear that.
Well, and I've seen, like, I don't ever know. I always wonder, is this, am I really seeing stuff? Or is, you know, is it really there? Or is it me just seeing things? Sometimes out of the corner of your eye, you think you see shadows.
Absolutely.
I think everybody experiences that at one point or another, that you see that. But I mean, like we discuss on here, I mean, is that something? Is that everything that we scoff off as some sort of, you know, mental thing or something that everybody's used to? It really is that us seeing things?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, why is it almost like it's easier to see movement out of the corner of your eye than it is if you're looking right at something? It's like you turn, it's almost like you catch it moving again. Like, is it moving because I'm not looking, or it thinks I'm not looking? You know, I don't know.
I know,
man.
I'm sure everybody's been sitting in their house watching TV, reading a book, doing something, and something will fall or move. You kind of think it moves and you'll look and then it will. And then you'll be like, that's odd.
Yeah, right.
Something just slowly over time get off balance. I mean, you're just like a gust of wind or...
Yeah, or something that's not supposed to fall over does. And you're like, come on now.
Yeah.
What the heck is that?
Interesting story.
Well, I got this. I'm going to throw back across to our friends across the big water here. This starts off saying that after coming out of the Royal Air Force in 1988, I worked for a while as a plainclothes security officer in a large London hotel. This hotel had quite a history as it was built on the site of a 15th century leper colony. After that, it became a hospital before becoming a hotel in Victorian times. And the fourth floor was always a bit weird with cold spots and lights flickering. My particular experience happened about 4 p.m. one afternoon. I was checking the fourth floor. At the far end, the corridor was shaped like a P and doubled back on itself. In the loop of the P was a lift and stairs with the glass doors on each side of it. As I walked past these doors, I saw a dark shape standing by the lift. It turned to look at me, and all I could remember were eyes looking at me. I blinked and looked again, but the figure was gone. Well, my second experience happened a couple of years later. I was now a prison officer working with young offenders. I was on nights, and myself and a fellow officer were using the gym. After my workout, I had a shower while he had used the sunbed. As I came out of the shower, I saw wet footprints leading to the door and from the door to the outside gate. They stopped about a foot from the gate. I asked my buddy if he was prating about, but he denied it. We looked closer at the prints, and they were the size of child's feet. Upon checking with our senior officer and doing a roll check, it transpired that the gym was built on the site of the old house block 4, which had always been a bit strange at those times, apparently. Best regards, Rich.
That's interesting.
Isn't that strange?
What is that?
Just little things that he had happen to him. But that's what I'm bringing up. That's the idea of little things that you don't... Like I said, he thought he saw somebody standing over by the lift, the elevator.
Yeah.
Something, a figure. But all he could see was like eyes. Feel it and see it. And then he blinked, it's gone. That's those little things out of the corner of your eye that you think you see but you're not sure of.
Right.
And then these footprints. What are these wet footprints? Little children's wet footprints. I mean, little things like that. How many times have you seen, let's say they're footprints, but you just kind of blow them off as like you see like a heavy dew in your yard, but then something tracked in that looks like footprints, but you're like, maybe it was a local dog come up here. You know, maybe somebody stray come up by and that was all it was. But maybe there really are footprints where there shouldn't be footprints. I don't know. It's little things. And that's what I liked about that story. Is it just makes me always think the little things that we, it's one thing to have something huge to where you have like a 3-foot dude in your house or like you're talking about you see these heads or something, you're watching a door move, things. That's one thing, but it's the little things. It's the details, the stuff that I think we easily look past. And maybe we need to pay a little more attention to it.
That is, it's creepy, but I enjoy those stories. Check this one out. Speaking of those friends of ours across the pond over in England, this takes place in England as well, and I thought it was interesting. Months ago, or even a year ago, we spoke to our friend Albert Rosales, who has the largest compendium of flying humanoid encounters I've ever seen. But not just flying humanoids, just all kinds of strange encounters. And this story comes from one of his documented cases. Check this out. It all began on a beautiful summer day at the beginning of autumn in 1998. I live in a small town called Grantham in Lincolnshire, UK. I was out with a couple of friends and it was coming up to the end of the summer holidays. I was at my friend's house when I decided to go have a nip home and to get a drink. My two friends walked down with me. It was only around the corner. A 5-minute walk to my house. I went in and they waited outside for me, or so I thought. While I was inside, I had a real thirst on and drank about 3 pints of water before going back out to my friends. When I went back out, there was no sign of my friends. I looked up and down the street for them. Down the street even more, about 4 houses down from mine. There was a couple of large conifer trees, about 18 feet high and overhanging the fence at the front. As I looked down, I saw 2 pairs of legs, as if 2 people were backed up in the tree hiding. I automatically thought it was my friends messing around with me, so I started walking down there, shouting that I could see you and to stop messing around. As I shouted to them, they sort of jumped up over the fence where the conifers were. A feat on its own, really. They came out the other side of the conifers and weirdly jumped over the next fence and into the next door garden. I say it was weirdly the way they jumped. It was more like a dive than climbing. When they entered the next garden, they went to a gate at the side of the property, which was about 8 feet high, and proceeded to dive jump that too. I didn't understand how they had done that, but I still wasn't fazed by it and shouted again for them to stop messing around. Then I had an idea. I'd go down quickly and catch them when they came out of the next garden. I proceeded on the next garden and couldn't believe what I was looking at. There in the garden stood two people. At first, they looked really odd. There was a man about 50, wearing a large trench coat that went down to nearly his feet. I could see he had large black boots on. As my eyes moved up, I saw his hands. They were very pale, and I noticed that his fingernails were very long, like claws, and were really dirty, and like a yellow color. Next, I saw his head. It was bald on top, and at the sides had long, black, greasy hair down to its shoulders. Its mouth was open, enough to show sharp, yellow teeth, and it had a large, pointed nose. That's when I noticed the eyes. Jet black eyes that you would never believe if you hadn't seen them. I instantly froze in the spot. It felt like time itself froze. No one was around. Nothing moved. No sound. No wind. And all I could do was stare at those eyes. And I knew that it was staring right back at me. I was aware of the other one near it. He was younger and dressed in more modern clothes at the time. As in trainers. Proper trousers, a big blue puffa jacket, and a baseball cap. I didn't see that one's face as I was stuck staring into those deep, endless pits that were the eyes of the first thing. I will tell you now that I have never felt so terrified in my life. After what felt like hours, I managed to break my gaze and run home. When I got indoors, I cried my eyes out. I think it was the shock, the horror of knowing that these things are wandering around in broad daylight. I never knew what they were until last night when I discovered the stories of the black-eyed children. And after reading some of those stories, I realized I was quite lucky that it wasn't a nighttime door visit, and I hope that I never have an experience like that again. What do you think of that?
I don't like any of that.
It sounds like Nosferatu, mm-hmm. He's describing, right? Like a black-eyed Nosferatu. Now, was it somebody really screwing around, you know, with some black contacts and a made-up costume? I don't know. I mean, you remember, he mentions that it's autumn. So, yeah. I mean, could it have been around Halloween? I don't know.
I guess it, I don't know. I don't, it's one of those things. I just don't know that people play around like that.
Yeah, I don't either.
And I guess it's your mind, you want to play it off like it is, but I don't know if that's really what's going on.
Yeah, but so all joking aside, what the hell is that? I mean, what did he see?
It's like all of these things that we talk about and discuss, flying humanoids or Shadow Man or any of that. What is it? I mean, is it, this is it, and I'm stuttering for a reason. It's because there's nothing aggravates me more than when people saying it's a closed case. It's people making mistakes. Now, look, folks, I get it. We all know. In reality, we all know that involved in crimes and things, that first-person accounts are crap, okay? We understand that. Under stressful situations, sometimes, well, most of the time, basically, people will forget details like, you know, what color the shirt the bank robber was wearing. You know, one person said it's blue, next person said it's red, next person said it's green. You don't, you know, height, things like that goes out the window. I get that. I understand that. We cover a lot of first-person accounts. But, and I say but for this, you can't throw out the account. You're not asking these people what he was dressed like. You're asking these people, did you see a bank robbery? I saw a bank robbery. I was involved in a bank. They know that. All right. When you see a shadow man, you see this shadow being, you see a flying humanoid, you're not asking, well, what color was his toenails? You know, now I know I'm splitting hairs. I know I'm getting down there. You're not talking about, you know, was his scales. But what you're saying is, did you see a bank robbery? I saw a bank robbery. Did you see something flying that looked like a human with big leathery wings? Yeah. Okay, then. What is that?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the same thing as this. You could sit here and dismiss all of it, but we still got to go down and boil it down to its most common form. And its most common form is they saw something they cannot explain.
That truly moved them and terrified them.
Nobody wants to see that. You know, they say they do and all that. And look, and I know there's people who want to have these experiences, but nobody wants to have an experience that rattles you to your core, that shakes everything that you believe in, everything that you thought was possible, that basically what your life you're living right now, of everybody going to work and spending time with their family. Nobody wants to have something that destroys all of that, that it lasted 10 seconds, 30 seconds. Nobody wants to have that happen to them because it hits their psyche very deep and it's hard on people. You don't go out willingly looking to have that happen. So why would you make these things up? You know, it's like you and I have discussed. I mean, if and folks, we're going to tell you this. Cal and I have discussed off air for years now, you know, about having these seeing things and stuff like that. And then just recently it was brought back up. And Cal and I said that if we did have some sort of crazy encounter or sighting, we would not share it because I believe it could muddy the waters of the show.
I think so.
Is I don't want people to say, oh, well, you know, now you're just making up stories because you've, you know, you want to have a story and all that stuff. I wouldn't share it. I would probably tell Kyle and a few others, and that would probably be
It's the same reason that I don't join any of these paranormal groups. It's the same reason I don't join these Sasquatching groups or become a Freemason and stuff. I mean, we've talked about it before that we should do that, but we've reconsidered. And we don't want to get involved because then I don't want anybody to have an angle. Like, that's the reason you believe in this is because you're a member of MUFON. You have an angle here.
Yeah.
I try to stay neutral. So I don't think even if I had an encounter with a Sasquatch or an extraterrestrial or a ghost or anything, I'm not so sure I would say anything about it because I don't want people to think that I have an agenda. That's the reason. Because I think most people would say, well, isn't it convenient that you talk about shadow people all the time, and then now all of a sudden now you're having shadow people encounters. Yeah. I mean, that's isn't that kind of funny?
Yeah.
You're just making up this stuff to get more listeners. You know, that's what I would feel. So, hey, look, I'm honest with people. I haven't had hardly anything paranormal ever happen to me. One time I saw a green orb floating across the field. That's it.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
I mean, everybody has those strange things happen, but nothing like, you know, nothing like what I want. Like, I want to see a Sasquatch. I want to see something like that. I never have.
Mm.
You know, I've never seen like a UFO. I've seen strange things in the sky, but I mean, for me to instantly go, that's UFO. No, you know, but it's like we said, these stories are my favorite because if I was to meet any of you and I actually had an experience and you ask me and I'm like, yeah, look, we don't talk about it on air, but I had this happen to me and all that stuff. And nobody was to believe me. It would bother me. You know, it'd be like they're just making it up. The whole thing. That's what I feel like. These people are sharing their stories out of just being a decent human being. You kind of have to go, okay, man, we support you. Whether you agree with it or not, you kind of got to support them.
That's
because you don't want them to feel abandoned by anybody.
Right, okay. Know? So the guy that had this encounter, I mean, do you think he's made any money off seeing Nosferatu in the courtyard that night?
No, not one bit.
No.
Not one bit. Why? And look, I understand there's trolls and things going on there, but why would you just make up a story if it wasn't intentionally going after somebody?
Yeah. I don't know. Anyways. Moving on.
Moving on, yeah. Well, I got you. We're talking about the shadows. Here you go. This is a few years back. I was living in Zurich, Switzerland, and the house I lived in was a bit older, built around 1900. I didn't like to be home alone. I never felt alone in a bad way. During this time, I was sad a lot. My mom had died just 1 year earlier. I thought that was the reason I'd felt a bit blue. But when I got a job and started spending more time away from the apartment, I quickly started feeling a lot better. Until one night. One night I had trouble falling asleep. And it was a common problem for me. And I was lying on my back with my eyes trying to rest and relax. The room was cold. Very cold. But it was in the middle of the hottest summer. For some reason, I opened my eyes and looking back at me was an old man in a dark hat and dark clothes. I was completely freaked out. I didn't wake my boyfriend, but I had told him before that the apartment was haunted, and I had previously heard steps. And like I said, I never felt alone. When I told him, he believed me and said that I should probably keep it to myself unless it was something really serious. I've lived in old houses before, and I'm not scared that easily, so I didn't tell him about the old man, just the footsteps. He still lives there, and I'm very glad that I don't. So what's that?
Yeah, I'm glad I don't want to live there either.
And he, just like that, he encouraged her not to share that story.
Well, yeah. I think people, most people would say, yeah, don't say anything, please.
You know, but like he's talking about, she left. The boyfriend still lives in the apartment.
Yeah.
You know, but.
He's like, please don't bring that up. I don't want everybody to think I'm dating a crazy one.
Exactly. But, I mean, but still, I mean, of course, look, I understand sharing. Sometimes sharing, maybe that's all it took was you could tell me. But he's like, don't tell the rest of my friends. But why not? Why not say, look, I had a strange experience. Maybe it was just something that happened to me while I was, you know, coming, just waking up.
Some people don't like to talk about stuff like that. I mean, some people think, I mean, like, even talking about ghosts and stuff, they, like, think it's some kind of, I don't know, anti-Christian. I mean, there's just all kinds of, you meet all kinds of people that have just crazy, no, just don't, we don't talk about that.
Folks, y'all can send us any story you want to.
Yeah.
This is the playground where everybody gets to have their say. This is where everybody gets to talk about whatever crazy ideas they have, whatever crazy things that they think they've seen or been involved with. It's okay. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about wild and wacky stuff. And I love the stories. But the old man story, that was just creepy because she didn't scream out. She didn't say what happens. I wish there was more to the story.
Yeah, if me, I would have wet the bed.
But what, right? But I guess it's one of those things that if, do you think if the story gets too detailed, like if she really got into some really deep detail, it would almost be like maybe she's making it up.
I always
think
so. In
fact, that maybe she's just like, I saw this thing, I don't know what it was, and it terrified me. Period.
Well, for whatever reason, whenever I'm reading a story, and if it's got like super amounts of detail to it, I'm always like, dude, this sounds too made up.
Almost like it's suckering you into it, almost like you're reading a fictional story.
Yeah, because I think in real life, even when you see something shocking, you kind of, there is a lot of vagueness to it.
Well, like we talked about with people in bank robberies forgetting things. That's a major detail. If you're going to be able to tell a detailed story, you're going to know the details of the robber.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. It's just strange. The whole thing is strange.
I thank everybody for sending us these stories. Please continue to do so. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. Into the
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I hope everybody enjoyed those stories. I know you want more stories. Everybody's always like, one more story, please, one more story. Come on, Uncle Kyle, one more story. One more story. And so I've got one more story here. I know how people that listen to Expanded Perspectives love time slips. And this story was sent to us by a listener. And that's what it sounds like this is. It says like this. My mother swears this is true. I first heard the story secondhand from my big sister. I was staying at her place one night, and we began talking about spirits and whatnot, when my sister told me my mother's story. She took a very serious tone and seemed to be genuinely creeped out. Now, I love the paranormal, and with that being said, it takes a lot to convince me, so I decided to wait until I saw my mother next to ask her about it. It was probably over a month later when I finally asked my mom about it. My sister hasn't heard my mom tell the story in years, so I was very vague about bringing it up, giving my mom just enough details to spark her memory. I didn't want to influence her story with what might have been false facts that my sister may have accidentally added over the years. This actually turned out to be the case because the stories were a little different, but the creepy premise was still the same. So I would tell the whole story, how my mother told me. When I first brought it up, my mom looked away from me and just kind of stared at the wall and said, "Wow, I haven't thought about that in years." Now, this made chills run up and down my spine immediately, because my mom is one of the bravest women I've ever known. She has gone through many traumatic events in her life, and I've never seen her more scared of a memory than that night. It took a moment, but then she told me the whole story in so much detail as she could remember. I'm 19, and this happened before I was born. My mom was probably in her 20s. I didn't ask too much about these details because they weren't important. My mom and her husband at the time were driving down a pretty empty back road. She said it wasn't quite dark yet, but it was getting there. My mom was in the passenger seat. There weren't many houses, at least none that were this memorable, except for one. They drove past a large house. My mother said that the windows were all lit up, like every light in the house was on at the same time. She also said that in the front yard, she saw a bunch of kids playing, about 10 of them. She said they were all boys and girls, and they were all dressed in white. The girls were wearing dresses, and she said that they were just running around, generally playing. Then in the middle of the group of kids, she saw two girls holding hands. One was older than the other, and the smaller one was holding a teddy bear in her other hand. Now these girls just stared at my mom as the car went by, and the other kids just continued to play around them. They passed the house and were up the road a ways. She couldn't see the house anymore due to the dense woods around it. My mom was pretty freaked out by the sight and asked her husband if he had seen it. He said no, he wasn't looking. So my mother somehow convinced her husband to turn around and pass the house again. It was the only house like that on that road, and they hadn't passed it by much, so they couldn't have mistaken it for another house. They pulled up in front of the house and stopped. My mom was shocked to see the yard empty. No kids at all. There were no lights on the house. And where my mom had seen the beautifully, brightly inhabited house just minutes before was now completely dark, a ramshack, obviously abandoned for a long time. The windows were all boarded up. The paint was chipping and faded. The grass needed to be mowed. The weeds were everywhere. Cobwebs you could see. It was an older house, for sure. My mom told her husband to drive, and they headed home. Now, to me, this is one of the creepiest parts of the story. Not just the house that my mother saw, but how freaked out she was by it. All right, I love that story. Sounds like a time slip story, right?
Yeah.
I love those stories.
I do, too. I'm a big fan.
I know that everybody always wants more time slip stories. The hard part I've mentioned before is there's just not that many of them that you find. If you go on the internet or anything, it's the same stories. I mean, there's multiple websites that have them, but it's basically like the same top 10,
yeah,
I would say. So to find any unusual ones or new ones out there is really exciting, and I love it when people forward us those because it is pretty interesting that people have these time shifts.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Anyways, what else is going on, Cam? You got any shout-outs or
well,
anything
I do.
You'd like to get to?
Folks, if you want to hear us talk about the Ouija boards, go to the Blurry Photos podcast. We have shared it. We've talked about doing it and all that stuff. We've done it. They've released it. So it's up on iTunes right now. You can go to Blurry Photos. It's all about the Ouija boards. It's about probably 2 hours long. Just me and Kyle and Dave and David. We're all having a good time on there. It was great. We had a good time with those guys. I think we're going to get them to hop on here with us here before long. I got somebody I want to shout out to. Well, it's multiple somebodies. We got an email a while back and when we were going through all of our troubles. And it one of those ones that kind of made you feel good. It's Miss Suzanne, a Suzanne Nicole from Suzanne Nicole Studio up there in Connecticut, talking about how much her and the ladies that work up there with her love the show. And we just want to tell all those ladies, thank you very much for the support.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you do amazing work. You girls are doing a good job. So thank you all so much. And thanks for the email. It was really awesome.
I really appreciate it. And they're truly talented too. Did you take a look at their website?
I did. Yeah, I didn't. It's one of those things. I can't visit it too much because I'm afraid the wife will see it and then be ordering all kinds of stuff. You know how that goes. So anyway, other than that, folks, hope everybody didn't wash away who was getting all the crazy rain and the hurricane weather and all the stuff that came through this weekend. All that stuff. It got pretty bad. Me and Kyle dealt with quite a bit of water around here. I mean, I think we actually set a new record in this area. When was it? Friday or so for close to 4 inches of rain just that day alone, I think, was what we'd actually
need it. It's been so dry around here.
It's been real dry.
We've had a very wet year, though.
I'm okay with that.
I am, too.
I'm okay with that. But, yes, I hope everybody else did okay. Hope nobody, anything bad happened to them or anything wash away. Hope nobody lost a vehicle, float off anywhere. That would be a bad deal.
That's right. Well, don't forget to dress up and get the candy ready for the kiddos. Hope everybody's going to have a really good Halloween. Be safe. Be careful out there. Make sure you carry a flashlight or something if it's dark.
Don't something reflective.
Too wild, you know.
Glow sticks. So those glow bracelets and glow those things seem to work great, too. Yeah, keep those on them.
Right. Don't
for
scare
sure.
the little ones. Don't scare them too bad. If a little one comes up there, you know. Don't scare them too bad.
Yeah. That always makes me feel bad. You see the little one all dressed up with crying because it's seen something.
Oh, you'll see it. Some of them hate wearing the costume.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I feel like that costume is totally the parents' idea.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, take care, folks. Everybody else, the elite members will speak to you on Thursday. Everybody else, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale. Have a good week.
Peace.
We're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna turn the light and shine. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna turn the light and shine.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.